Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe le'mor, Zot tihye Torat ha-mitzorah, Biyom tohorato vihuva el ha-kohen. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Mitzora, which is sort of the lull between the storms, or whatever the expression is. Since last week we finished the four special Parshiot, that period included Purim in the middle. Last week, Tazria and HaChodesh, that finished the first half of the mitzvot of the Torah, 27 out of 54. Mitzora, which is usually read together with Tazria in all 12-month years, in a Shana Me'uberet, sometimes called a leap year, the one that has two Adars, 13 months altogether. Tazria and Mitzora are split. And Mitzora this year is read by itself, without it being a special parsha. And you sort of sense a little, I don't know, next week is already Shabbat HaGadol, then comes Pesach, and then things keep hopping for quite a while. So, even though the show is officially for Parshat Mitzora, I don't know how much of Parshat Mitzora we'll touch on. I touched upon some of the ideas that really belong to both Tazria and Mitzora last year. I will mention something briefly, but then I want to say a few Pesach thoughts, since next week's show is also going to be pre-Pesach, but it's not enough in the 46 minutes net that we have for this show. There's plenty to say a couple of weeks running, especially under the concept of Shloshim Yom Kodem Hechag, 30 days before the festival. You already start speaking and teaching and darshaning about the Chag. So we'll have things related to Pesach. I gave two little mini shiurim. One, well, you'll see, it was new and fresh to me, or let's put it like this. It's an idea that's been percolating for a couple of years, not too many, and another component, a very special component, was added just last night, and I'm glad to share it with you, as long as the listeners do not include any people who will actually be at my Seder, because I want to say it then as well. In any event, recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the third day of Nisan, 5771. Last night, the eve of the third day, was already the first opportunity for Kiddush Levana. It always raises eyebrows when you mention Kiddush Levana for that kind of night, because people are attuned that 3 days is a minimum, which is true, but not 3 days from Rosh Chodesh, 3 days from the Molad, which was this past Sunday. That means Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is 3 full days from the Molad, even though Wednesday was the second of the month, and that night, last night, was the eve of the third day, appropriate for Kiddush Levana. As is my experience, relatively few people make an effort to say Kiddush Levana this early, and especially during the week. and many people will be saying Kiddush Levana this Motzoi Shabbat. That's the popular time of the week for Kiddush Levana, when people are still clothed and perfumed, so to speak, from Shabbat, and together in shul, and it has the flavor of a public kind of thing. And seven people who wait 7 days from the Molad strictly will not be able to do their Kiddush Levana this month until Sunday night. So I, Baruch Hashem, already did it last night, as did my brother in Bnei Brak. We spoke to each other while we were doing Kiddush Levana, said Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom to each other. But most people should be just reminded Kiddush Levana is coming. The other thing that's coming, or that's not coming, but it's here already, I will mention in a moment. But first, because we are not saying Tachanun during the month of Nisan, we will use Psalm 121 rather than 130. The feelings are still the same, asking God for help, especially for those things which we are or seem to be helpless about. And I always keep in mind Gilad Shalit and Jonathan Pollard and other Israelis and Jews who are missing or in captivity, wherever they are. Shir lama'alot, esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai, osei shamayim va'oretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, al yanum shomerecha. Hine lo yanum v'lo yishan, shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha, al yad yeminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka, v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmoret nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha, me'ata v'ad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam, uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotziyem, mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela la'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. The other thing I mentioned, I said I was going to mention, is Birkat Ilanot. Now, I grew up in a religious home, went to religious schools from kindergarten on, but for some reason, I either never learned or I never remember learning or was not aware of the bracha that is said on fruit trees in blossom during the month of Nisan. In fact, when I taught this bracha, after I found out about it, it was most often met with skepticism of, yeah, sure, tell me something else, because they didn't even take it seriously. They didn't believe what I was saying. It sounds kind of weird, but it's really a very, very special bracha, so let's go back a step or two. Trees are obviously something special for human beings. The Torah actually says, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, because a person is the tree of the field. Let's interpret that as, is like the tree of the field, and we'll have to speculate exactly what that means. But it's more than that. We see it manifest in the brachot, which we say, the blessings before we eat. Now, I usually present it as follows. Our sages, who were encharged with composing the brachot which we say before we eat, could have opted for a single catch-all generic bracha, like the one we actually have, called Shahakol Nihiyah Bidvaro, that everything that exists came into existence by God's divine command. That, if you think about it, had our sages said, recite that blessing, blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, where everything that exists before because God said so, that would cover anything. You want to sit down and eat a steak with a side order of mashed potatoes and a salad, that bracha would be appropriate. You want to have a glass of wine? Appropriate. You want to have bread? Appropriate. You want to smell a fragrant rose? Appropriate. You see a rainbow? Good bracha to say, shahakol niyah bidvaro. Had our sages gone in that direction by saying, here is one bracha which we recite before we experience or partake of this world, then we would grow up with that bracha, we would all know it by heart, and we would say it on all of these occasions. But they didn't go in that direction. They went in the direction of special brachot for various reasons. For example, in the eating, they wanted to build in to the rule of brachot an awareness on our part, or an inspiration for our awareness, that there is significant difference in growing food from the ground compared with just taking it from nature. You take a cow, you slaughter it, you butcher it, you prepare its meat, and you eat it. Or you milk a cow and you drink its milk. But painting myself into a corner here. What I mean to say, I should put in the positive sense, when you plant food and you cultivate it and you nurture it and you then harvest it, there's something extra special to it. So our sages said, when you eat meat, when you eat an egg, when you drink water, milk, soda, whatever, make the generic shahakol niyah bidvaro. But when you eat something that comes from the ground, a tomato, a potato, a sweet potato, corn, whatever, make a special bracha that acknowledges the ground from which the food came. And that bracha is Borei Pri Ha'adama. Then they said, you know something, when that which comes from the ground grows on a tree, which of course comes from the ground, let's say an apple, they could have said, go with the Borei Pri Ha'adama, blessed is he who created the fruit of the ground, because after all, an apple tree comes from the ground, and the apples come from the apple tree. But they went another step further. They said something extra special about a tree. An apple and a tomato are both fruits. I saw a cute statement. Knowledge is knowing that a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not using it in a fruit salad. Okay, the difference between an apple and a tomato, both of which are biological fruits, is that when you pick a tomato, you want another one, you'll have to plant it again. When you pick an apple, or you pick dozens and dozens of apples from a tree, next season you'll have another crop of apples to pick without much work in the meantime. Besides that, trees prevent soil erosion, and trees give us wood and paper later, and trees give a home for birds and squirrels and who knows what else, and provide shade for people, and all of that contributed to a special bracha, more than Borei Pri Ha'adama, which we call Borei Pri Ha'etz. It recognizes a tree. And our sages wanted to drive that point across, and they said, even when you see a magnificent forest, and you're not directly benefiting from the trees, acknowledge God for his creation of the trees by reciting the bracha, Shekacha lo ba'olamo. Shekacha lo ba'olamo. That's how it is in his world. And they went another step further. They said, when you see a fruit tree that in another month's time or so will bear fruit which we will benefit from, and before those fruits come on the tree, flowers appear, and they are beautiful to look at and fragrant to smell, then we want to acknowledge this special gift from God, as if to say to him, this is truly amazing. Not only, or let's put it like this, this tree would justify its existence if all I got from it were the apples to eat. Now you are showing me a magnificent visual display of pretty flowers, and when I go close and I take a deep breath, the fragrant smell of those flowers, it's a bonus. It's a chupar. It's a perk of being part of this world. And we acknowledge this to God once a year, specifically in the month of Nisan, which is the month of renewal. And we say a special blessing. It begins the same way. Blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe. Shelo chisar ba'olamo davar. You did not leave out anything in your world. And you created in it all kind of good things and good trees for the benefit and pleasure of the human beings who you created and put into this world. So, you can get on to, if you don't have last week's Torah tidbits, or you don't have a sitter that has the blessing and the accompanying chapters of Tehillim, which many people say, you can get on to the website, www.ttidbits.com. Go to back issue, because this week is 951. You go to 950 in the back issue. And if you open up the extra light, maybe not, certainly the light or the whole file, it's a large file, but there you will find a very colorful page with pictures, with the bracha, the blessing for the trees, with the two chapters of Tehillim that many people add, plus the poem by Joyce Kilmer on trees, and the piece of the Gemara from Masechet Ta'anit, a very beautiful piece. I've featured it on this show in the past, and if I could find the song, I'm going to play it right now, called Ilan Ilan, How Tree, and it's a story of a person who met this very wise and great man, and when they were parting, he says to this great man, what can I say to you? You know, how can I bless you? You have so many things. And either he or the other one came up with the following analogy. Guy's walking on the road, and is very, very thirsty, very hot and tired, and he sees a beautiful tree, and under that tree is a stream of cool, drinkable water. And he goes under the tree into its shade and cools off, takes drinks from the brook, and picks fruit from the tree, and is very, very refreshed. When he's about to leave, he says, how can I bless you? Should I say, may your fruit be succulent? They are. Should I say, may your shade be pleasing to people? It already is. Should I say that you should have a brook running under you with cool water? It already does. Ah, I know. I will say to you, may all the trees that grow from cuttings from you should be as wonderful as you. So too to the person. Shall I say, you should have great success in Torah learning? You do. And great success financially, you already have that. Maybe I should say, may you be blessed with wonderful children. You already are. Ah, I will say, may your children grow to be like you. That's the song Ilan Ilan. If I can find it, I'm going to play it. If I can find it, sorry. But at least you heard the words of the song, the meaning of the song, from the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit. After, hopefully, the song, or right now, will be the first of the mini shiurim, and then we'll continue and put on the second mini shiur sometime along the line, maybe another Pesach-related song. We shall see how the show develops. I hope you're learning something, and I hope you're enjoying. Unfortunately, that was a little less than half the song, but I hope you got the idea, the flavor. It's a very mellow kind of tune. In any event, we'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits Audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Metzora, pre-Pesach, and we are about to listen to the mini shiurim that were given to the folders of Torah Tidbits a little while ago, and both of those are on two different aspects of Pesach, as you will hear. With your permission, I have this thing every year, not just at Pesach time, but every holiday, where I get a little apprehensive that I don't want to go through the holiday with nothing new. I don't mean a new tie or a new suit. I'm talking about a new thought, a new concept, a new idea. Because I teach, there's always the temptation to give you my favorite stuff, some of which could be new to you, but it's not new to me. And I need something new. I have never, ever been disappointed. I always hear, read, or think up a new angle. And I am excited to share this with you. I went to a shiur last night here at the center by Rabbi Ilan Adler, and I decided I'm sitting through, and I'm going to be relatively quiet and not chime in with my own things to learn something new. And this was the gem that I got from him. Now I'm going to add it to make a whole picture of it. One of the Manish Tana questions, Shebechol Halelot Ein Onu Matbilin Afilu Pam Echat, we don't dip on all other nights of the year, Halayla Hazeh Shtei Fa'amim, twice. Now, when, this is not all from last night, when my oldest daughter was about 5, she asked the Manish Tana, she knew what it meant already, and she said, "But Daddy, it's not true, because I dip French fries in ketchup all the time." So how could she say, on all other nights of the year, "Ein onu matbilin afilu pam echad"? It's not true. I said, "Very good. You should know that some of the Haggadah commentaries say, Ein onu chayavim litbol. We have no obligation to dip. It's not part of the ritual. You want to dip, you could dip. You could dip 10 times. But at the Seder, the point is, built in to the Seder is dipping. Then, the question, which I didn't really think of till last night, and this is what he got me thinking, is, all right, matzah, chametz matzah, laila zeh, kulo matzah, that's a very significant element in Pesach, obviously. So that's part of Manish Tana. Moror, significant element, part of Manish Tana. The fourth bracha, the fourth question we're going to leave out, the one about reclining, because that was a substitute. The original fourth question was, on all other nights of the year, we eat meat, sometimes cooked, and sometimes roasted, and sometimes broiled, and sometimes barbecued, whatever. Halayla hazeh kulo tzeli. Tonight, only roasted. Referring to the Korban Chagiga and the Korban Pesach. Obviously, we can't ask that question today, because we don't have the Korban Pesach. In fact, we have a minhag not to eat roasted meat, Ashkenazim. Sfardim, by the way, have a minhag to eat roasted meat, Zecher L'Korban Pesach. We have the minhag not to eat roasted, Zecher L'Churban Beit HaMikdash. So it's sort of the other side of the coin, and the communities took one side or the other. So those questions, 3 out of the 4, are very significant to Pesach, because they touch on Pesach, Matzah, and Moror, which we know the Mishnah from Rabban Gamliel, anyone who does not discuss those things, lo yatzai yedei chovato, didn't fulfill the thing. But the dipping seems like such an inconsequential part. True, one dipping is the Moror and Charoset, but we already covered the Moror question with the Sha'ar Yerakot vegetables, and it doesn't seem to be on the same level question as Pesach, Matzah, and Moror. So this is what he said in his father's name. There are 2 dippings which are very significant in the Torah. One that started the whole Mitzrayim, Egypt story, and one that ends Shibud Mitzrayim. The dipping that starts it is the dipping of the Kutonet Pasim, the multicolored striped garment that Yaakov had, that the brothers took off of him when they threw him into the pit, that they dipped in the blood of a goat in order to show it to Yaakov and say, "Recognize this, is this your son's?" That began Shibud Mitzrayim, and I told him, Ilan Adler, that there's a medrash which makes it even stronger. Medrash Paliya, a wondrous medrash. It's a collection. I told the story all the time that when I browse for Sfarim, I open up a page at random, I read one thing. If I like it, I read another thing. If I like that too, I assume I'll like everything in the book, and I buy it. Well, I opened this book, Medrash Paliya, at random to the following medrash. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, God says to the people of Israel, "You sold your brother into Egyptian slavery. I swear by your lives that every year you will say, Avadim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt." Very powerful, because a lot of people look, which is quoted in the Haggadah, to the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the covenant between the pieces of God and Abraham, where God already tells Abraham that your descendants will be strangers in a strange land, does not mention where, does not mention which generation, but they will be, and they will serve them, and afterwards they will go out with great wealth. So that prophecy, obviously, in retrospect, applies to Egypt. But the choice of place and the choice of generation maybe was solidified with Mechirat Yosef, the sale of Yosef. Because that act was the significant beginning of the whole process. In fact, in the Haggadah, we say, when we start Magid, I'm not talking about all the preliminary stuff, but we actually get into the guts of Magid. We start with Tse Ulamad, Ma Bikesh Lavan Ha'arami Lasot Liyakov Avinu. Go out and see what Lavan wanted to do to Yaakov. So the famous question is, if Paro is the real villain of the Pesach story, what are we pulling the story back a couple of generations to Lavan and Yaakov? The answer that's given, or one of the answers, is that Lavan's deception of Yaakov by giving him Leah in the place of Rachel, whom he loved, set into motion the jealousy between not just Rachel and Leah, but the children of Leah with the child at the time, meaning Yosef, of Rachel. And that jealousy manifested itself in the sale of Yosef, and that's what brought everybody down to Mitzrayim eventually. So it's the proper beginning of the story, the dipping of the kutonet pasim in the blood of the goat. Add one more point to it. Rashi on kutonet pasim. Yeah. Rashi on kutonet pasim uses the term karpas. Not the karpas that we have at the Seder, but the karpas of the Megillah. In Megillat Esther, there's a description of the fabric that was decorating the palace of Ahasuerus during his parties, and it describes three different colored fabric: chur, which is white; karpas, which is green; utchelet, which is blue. Chur, karpas, utchelet. Rashi says on kutonet pasim, the multicolored Joseph and his technicolor, whatever, that garment is described, the word pasim, pei samach, for pas, Rashi says, like karpas, in the description of the fabric that was decorating the palace of Ahasuerus. We call the green vegetable that we dip in salt water at the beginning of the Seder, karpas. And therefore, that's, aside from whatever other significance you know about karpas, that's a significance too, that it relates to Mechirat Yosef. So dipping number one, very, very essential to the story, at that point, at the beginning of the whole thing. The last dipping, the second dipping, comes at the end as a sign of the end of Egyptian slavery, when the Jews dipped an agudat ezov, a bundle of hyssop, into the blood of the Korban Pesach, which was the deity of Egypt, smeared the blood on their doorposts and on the lintel, as an act, I mean, they did it as a command of God, but it was an act of defiance against Egypt, saying, this is what we think of your God that oppressed us so much, you doing this in his name. And they did this with no repercussions, and that there is no clearer demonstration that we were really free of Egypt. Because under any normal circumstances, mobs would have formed and killed the Jews for profaning their God, slaughtering a sheep and smearing its blood on your doorpost. So that dipping of Agudat Ezov in the blood of the sheep, of the lamb, and the first blood and the first dipping are the two dippings that are associated with Seder night, and both of which are very significant to the story. And going back to Manishtana, you now have originally four very solid points raised in the Manishtana. One is the matzah, one is marar, one of these two dippings, and one is the eating of roasted meat. How reclining fits in, I have to work on still, but that's the modern substitute because we couldn't ask the Beit HaMikdash question. I found that very powerful.
With the dipping in salt water, so which indicates that we had better years, right?
Okay. In fact, you want to say the dipping of Karpas, the coat of Yosef, in the tears of Yaakov, let's say. You could do that. I don't know, you know, you shouldn't lose the power of a vort by nitpicking and saying, well, it doesn't really equal to it. On the other hand, the dipping of the maror in charoset, charoset, one of the ingredients is wine, and aside from making it taste sweet, it's also a symbol of blood. So it fits in nicely. Plus, opposite, right? It's opposites, but you have a whole bunch of opposites when it comes to Pesach. That's a whole other thing. Maybe I'll tell you a little bit later. But Pesach is filled with opposites. Again, with your permission, this came up. Ruth Cohen is not here now, but she was the one who made the comment. There is an observation, the more you look, the more you'll see it, that most of the Pesach items, symbols, that we have are double. Excuse me. Let's start all over from the beginning. There is a Haggadah with a commentary by Rav Sorotzkin. The Haggadah is called Hashir V'Hashevach. And he asks the following question about Manishtana. We do a whole bunch of things at the beginning of the Seder to cause curiosity in the uninitiated, be they children or adults who are not that familiar with things. And finally, after doing a whole bunch of unusual things, everybody gets a full cup of wine for Kiddush instead of just the Kiddush maker. The Kiddush is different. The guy's wearing a kittel in many families. Everybody sits and reclines to drink. You go to wash. That's normal, but you don't make a bracha. That's not normal. You don't have bread or matzah right away, but you have karpas, unusual. You dip it in salt water. You fill a second cup of wine. You break the matzah, but you don't eat it. You put part of it away, and you put the other part back. Curious and curiouser, as it says in Alice in Wonderland. And finally, says the Mishnah, here's where the child asks his question. His question is, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylot. Why is this night so different from other nights? First question, or first part of the question that he asks, is about eating matzah. Asks Rav Sorotzkin, isn't that strange that the first question he would ask is the one thing that he just got an answer for? We broke the middle matzah, held a piece of it aloft, and recited in Aramaic on purpose, because that was the spoken language at the time, so that everybody understands and can't say, well, that was Hebrew and I don't understand Hebrew. They spoke Aramaic, they understood it, and we say to everybody at the table, this matzah is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Then we say to the child, okay, got any questions? Yeah, why do we eat matzah? Dumb question. He wasn't listening. He was just told why we eat matzah. Answers Rav Sorotzkin, nuh-uh. Brilliant question. Because the question is not why do we eat matzah. Any of you remember Manishtana well enough? What's the question about matzah? Not why do we eat matzah. There's one word that's very important. Kulo. Kulo halayla hazeh. Kulo matzah. All other nights we have chametz and matzah, and this night only matzah. Only matzah? The kid asks. You said matzah is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Okay, so we should eat matzah. But we should also eat a beautiful, fresh, fluffy, delicious challah to symbolize luxury and freedom. If this night symbolizes the transition from avdut to chayrut, so the norm would be to have a sign of avdut, of slavery, which you already took this matzah, broke it, held the broken piece aloft, and said, this is the bread of affliction. I got that. But what about the other commemoration? Excellent question, says Rav Sarotskin. And the answer we say to him is, wait. You will see, first we're going to say the Haggadah, we're going to explain the Haggadah, we're going to tell the story of the Exodus, and then, at the end of the Magid portion, I'm going to pick up that same piece of matzah that we already told you was the bread of affliction. And we're going to ask, matzah zo she'onu ochlim al shumma, this matzah which we eat, why? What do you mean, why? You told us why. Ah, that's not the whole answer. The why is the haste in which they left Egypt in God's command, trusting in God, and not even spending the time to provide proper food for the journey. Which means, now the child who asks the Manishtana gets his answer to the first question. The reason that tonight is kulo matzah is because matzah is two symbols rolled into one. It is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. It is the bread of freedom and the haste of the Exodus. Take that idea and now carry it further, and it applies almost to everything. What I said before, which is where this question came from, was wine. Wine, for sure, is a sign of freedom and luxury. Slaves don't drink wine. Free people drink wine. Noble people drink wine. But wine, especially a preference for red wine, is a reminder of blood, which is a reminder of the oppression and the slavery. Karpas, a fresh spring vegetable. Reminder of the spring, rebirth, renewal in which we came out of Egypt. Karpas is also a meager food. It's not meat. It's not whatever. It's a little bit of vegetables reminiscent of slave food. Salt water. Bitter tears that our ancestors cried in Egypt. Salt water, Yamsuf, the Red Sea, sign of Exodus, of the freedom. Which is it? The answer is it's both. Charoset. Charoset is commemorative of what? The mortar that was baked into bricks. Charoset is a delicious, sweet condiment, which a lot of people, right after they make korech, will take matzah and spread it with charoset and enjoy themselves. And according to the Sephardi customs, it's not just apple and cinnamon and wine, but it's dates and dried apricot and all kind of delicious stuff. So how do you take a single symbol and make it joyous as a sign of freedom and also sad as a sign of slavery and oppression? That's Pesach. That's Pesach. The egg on the Seder plate. Egg is mourner's food. But egg also represents Yom Tov. I'll tell you why. First of all, you make an Erev Tavshilin with egg, but I don't think that's the reason. There are 63 volumes of Mishnah. Almost every one is named based on the theme of the book. If I tell you there's a volume of Mishnah called Brachot, can you guess what it contains? Brachas and Davening and Kriyat Shema. If I tell you there's one called Shvi'it, what's it about? Shemitah. And there's another one called Sanhedrin. Guess what it's about? Sanhedrin. And another one called Ketuvot. What's that about? Ketuvot and marriage. Almost all Mesechtot Mishnayot are named for their theme. There is one Masechet where the theme is Yom Tov, but it's not called Yom Tov. It's called Beitza, egg. Why? Unique. Atypically, it is named for the first word in the Mishnah. Beitza shenolda b'yom tov, an egg that was laid on Yom Tov. What's its status about Muktzah, the first day, the second day, Shabbos, whatever. So for some reason, Chazal named that Masechet, which should have been called Yom Tov, they named it Beitza, and therefore the Beitza, the egg, symbolizes Yom Tov. At the same time, it symbolizes mourner's food. You go on, and whatever you find in the Seder ritual probably has these two different meanings rolled into one. And that's how you could explain that mini-shir was about 4 minutes longer. I'm sorry that you lost those 4 minutes. But on this note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.